Watching the Monkey.
Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of The Art of Being with the Act Matrix. I'm one of your co-hosts, Kevin.
And I'm the other one, Phil.
And Phil's the other one. And before we get too far into talking to Paul Rock, Phil's going to give you a message from our sponsor.
Yes, this is the shameless plug portion of the show, which the sponsor is us. And we are sponsoring the podcast through the ACT Matrix certification program, which you may or may not know something about. But the idea is that we're trying to build a community of like-minded folks that are into doing generous work, like Kevin and Paul and I have been doing, and many, many others. And certification really gives you three things from our perspective. It would give you some credibility, not that you don't have any now, but it would show that you're a competent, trustworthy source when it comes to ACT Matrix kinds of things. Establishing yourself as an authority, that you have expertise that you can share.
A psychological flexibility
expert. Card-carrying member, yes.
I have these cards made up that says psychological flexibility training.
Very nice. So,
you can make one up that says psychological flexibility expert.
There you go. Put that on your moniker. Yes. So then all you got to do is come and sign up via the ACT Matrix Academy website. There's a link somewhere if you're watching.
And remember, that's just for a certification.
Yeah. Yep.
To get the certificate. All the other training we do is free. We don't charge for training.
Yep. We want people using this.
Well, we want people using it, but then some people want to be certified. So we charge a fee for people to get certified, and that lets us stay in business.
Yes.
And just so far, just enough people want to be certified that it keeps us going.
And we're staying in business.
But we wouldn't want to limit the training.
Absolutely not.
That's not our shtick.
It's important to get the training out.
We don't do that. And if you need a special rate for the certification, we do that too.
And we're flexible.
We're flexible. We just, it's basically you need to email us, contact us and say, hey, I got special circumstances. Can you work with me? Which the answer is always yes. So anyway, but this is a podcast though. And this is Paul. And Paul, I believe this is your second podcast.
It is indeed, Kevin.
It is. All right. So our second podcast with Paul, who is in jolly old England, if I do recall.
Yeah, Manchester.
Salford's.
It's part of Greater Manchester. It's own city, but you have to be careful. When you say Manchester, Salfordians, because they have their own cathedral. It's only on the other side of a small river.
Uh-huh.
And they sort of get very territorial about it.
Oh, okay. Even over there,
huh? Oh, yeah. Wow.
Yeah. Like, my postcode is half of M3 is in Manchester and half is in Salford. So I can walk 10 minutes from here and I'm officially in Manchester.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's all to do with cathedrals, you know. So
it all has to do with cathedrals. Well, now, Phil's going to be familiar with that because he's from Philadelphia.
That's right.
Okay. And he knows that every neighborhood has its cathedral.
Has a parish and a cathedral, church,
Yeah.
And that's how you know each other in Philadelphia. What parish do you belong to, right?
Yeah. Okay.
And why do I know this? Because my wife, my lovely wife, is from Philadelphia and exactly that. So,
okay.
So they obviously got that from someplace, and it's really not much of a surprise that it was in part England. The Brits. So there you go. And okay, so what's the podcast about today?
Well, I suppose I'll just speak about what I have about the Matrix, as always.
How to build a matrix.
Of course. What else matters?
There's all kinds of stuff that goes in the lower right-hand part.
All right. Just about anything can go in that.
So I guess the matrix is also important, so it gets itself into the lower right-hand quadrant. Okay.
Well, at the moment, I have an orchestra of not once in the left lower left quadrant going on, because I thought the podcast was at 9 o'clock tonight, number one. So when I got the message, I was on the way back from a group in Bolton, I got the message out about 4:20. I was on the tram. Then it comes in and I can't get the laptop working. So hence I might have a shaky picture because I have a mobile phone in my hand. So I have an orchestra going on at the moment, yeah.
Well, you've got a pretty steady hand there, Paul.
You do indeed. We've been there, done that kind of stuff.
Right. Make it happen, Kevin. Make it happen.
Yeah.
For the most part, we do. Last week, we missed a mastermind last week.
Yeah, we did.
Bill was out.
Yeah.
And then between myself and my daughter and some other people got some stuff.
Yeah.
We just once or twice a year, everything conspires against us. And, but for the most part, we get this stuff done. Well, or at least one or the other of us. But Paul is here for a he thought he was here for a certification podcast. Phil and I set him straight really quick. Yeah.
He's moved past certification.
Yeah, you're way past certification, so it wouldn't be that. So a little bit of a plug for Paul is certified. He's a certified ACT Matrix, Pro Social Matrix trainer, who does great work in. Well, I don't know if it's in Manchester or where it is.
I tell you what it is, Kevin. I do two groups. So I do one in Salford, which will be its own city in its own right, but it's part of the greater Manchester, just the greater Manchester area, right?
Okay. Yeah.
So then on the other side, I would have a place called Bolton, which would be its own, another big sort of...
how do you spell that?
B-O-L-T-O-N.
Now, I think there's... Bolton,
yeah. So I think there's about 250,000 people there. But it's not a city, but it's a very big town with a lot of attachments.
I live in the state of Maine. That's a city.
That's a buddy metropolis in Maine.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I do to groups. And as you know, we work with people that have really severe addiction problems. And alcohol or heroin or crack or whatever. And basically, most of them are of a certain age that are lucky to still be alive, yeah?
Yeah.
And what we do is we do the matrix, we do a lot of other exercises that, they sort of be spin-offs of the matrix. All about concentrating on directions, concentrating on, things like the lemon exercise, how a simple word.
The lemon exercise. I haven't heard of that in a year.
What it is basically, Kevin, is you get people, you do an imaginary thing that there's a lemon. And you get them to visualize the lemon, all that sort of stuff. Yeah,
it's a picture of lemon, right? Yep.
Yeah, and then you keep getting them to break it down, as if they're cutting the lemon, they're get them to smell the lemon.
Okay.
And then you get them to jam it, pretend they're jamming it into sticking.
Oh
in
yeah, lemon. Yeah. Okay.
And we all go.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then we switch. We say, now for the people that like the lemon, let's pick something that you really dislike. So people that say like say sprouts, whatever. And you put a knife around
Brussels sprouts,
green stuff.
So you force them, you force them to eat it. So you show them the way a simple word can create how powerful a word is.
How powerful a word is, right?
Power of words. Yep.
So it's sort of like that, as you said, that RFT in the wrong way. That way it shows them how all of a sudden a simple word can create a picture frames. So that's just, the flip side, how you can be conned by addiction.
A word can show you a whole frame, a picture frame, as you said, but it can also stick you in a frame.
Yeah.
But it was a personal thing, Kevin. Sometimes, I don't know if you are familiar with a chocolate bar called Kit Kats.
Oh, yeah, one of my all-time favorites.
Break me off a piece of that Kit Kat.
Kit Kats.
Oh, there we go.
I can do it. I can do the jingle.
If you mention Kit Kat to me, the first thing that comes, the first frame that starts with me is Kit Kat, tin foil, heroin.
Ah, there you go.
Really? Boom, boom, boom. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Instantaneously. I don't think, oh, chocolate bar, dip it into my tea. That doesn't come into it.
Yeah.
So I have to add
now, hold on a minute. You're telling me that in the Kit Kat bars, people take the wrappers and use the wrappers for heroin?
Tinfoil. If you're in a prison setting where you can't go down to the shop and buy a roll of tinfoil.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Right. Yeah.
So the Kit Kat wrapper will do.
See, now you got it. Now you're doing a MacGyver. You remember that? You ever see that TV show MacGyver?
Yes.
Right. That's a MacGyver, except it's MacGyver for heroin.
Exactly. So personally, what I do there is I'd add a flexible frame to it.
Okay.
So then I'd add blood clots on the lung, hospital.
Ah.
Not able to breathe.
Ah.
So Paul's just talking about how you add flexible frames to a previous inflexible frame.
Yeah, and exactly.
That's not to get too technical, folks. That's essentially what all of ACT is.
Yeah.
It's adding flexible frames to stuck frames.
Yeah.
Because you can't, the old way was sort of like, well, don't have that stuck frame. Just get rid of it. Don't have it. Well, it doesn't work because you still got it. So then it comes around, well, okay, you're just going to have it. That's the acceptance part. You're just going to have it.
Yeah.
And now let's show you how you can add some flexibility to that. Mm-hmm. And now from RFT, the relational frame theory, they talk about adding flexible frames. And there's an infinite number of ways you can add flexible frames, right?
Yeah.
That's where sort of the jazzy stuff of ACT comes from, of people cooking up all this new stuff.
Exactly.
And how do you add a flexible frame to a Kit Kat tin foil?
Well, obviously, the usual picture that runs, that has always run, well, when I get to that, then I'll add something that isn't too nice.
Okay.
And the more I add it, when I hear the word Kit Kat, instead of thinking of how beautiful it was, I'll think of the hospital, I'll add the frames onto it. So when that ended, we say it started with Kit Kat, all of a sudden, before I know what was happening, I'll be on tinfoil, heroin, balls. But I had the frames
cracking the whole consequence out, right?
Yes. Yeah. I had the consequence of blood clots on the lung.
Oof.
Pneumonia.
Yeah.
Hospital. Can't breathe. So they're the frames I would add to take the
But that now from that riff, you can then keep on riffing out to other stuff though. Like heroin, all this stuff, and then like learning the Matrix, and then
that's from it. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. That's the iterative nature of language.
Right. Okay. Well, with people, we say on the groups, right, we've had a lot of success in the groups, right, with them. Like, they all want to press that pause. But once we show them how, listen, this is not abnormal. You know, your autopilot, like, you know, it's great for putting your socks on. It's great for brushing your teeth that you don't have to watch it. But also, when you add a drug into the equation and to fix feelings, which works better than anything we say, a drug or alcohol, but then you're getting stuck. You get stuck.
Yeah.
You know, and when you say to them and you let them say it on the board and you say, look, this isn't abnormal. You know, this is understandable how this happened. But what you need to do is you need to now change your behavior to get towards a solid direction. You know, over on the towards. Obviously on the towards side, you know, but obviously starting off with something that's important, as someone that's important to them initially, So that's what we do, Ken. But look, I can't really speak for other people. I've had a few things with people today. I'd say, and this is what the beauty of doing the course with yourself, right? It was a different angle coming at it from, right? It caused me a lot of stress in the early stages because I was having to unlearn sort of what I knew and where to apply your bit. Do you understand?
Yes.
I was like, well, hang on, is that there? What does that mean there? Like, so I was learning a different sort of, a different perspective on looking at it from a different side, yeah? But I, where I benefited greatly from your particular course, so the thing what we say, the sneaky judgments.
Hey, you want to see my sticker on my Apple or sneaky judgment? Oh, yeah. Right there. Yeah. It's always there. I always remind myself.
I got mine there too.
He's got sneaky judgments. And folks, and before it goes too far, this so we can catch up, Phil and I spend a lot of time on that lately. Yeah. Because they are sneaky. You get the same things to people and you're judging them.
Yep.
And you don't, and sneaky meaning you didn't mean to.
No.
That wasn't your intention, but it works out that you're judging them. We're trying to help ourselves be more and more aware of those situations where we're unintentionally doing sneaky judging on people.
Or of ourselves.
Pointing out when we hear it in the media and such.
I learned a lot from that, Kevin. Because I didn't realize unintentionally, I thought I was advising people. But I can't advise them to not do something because it's only words. I can suggest something to them like, say, well, look, I can't tell you what to do with your life. And I won't be there when you get a craving to use a drug or alcohol. Well, this is what we do here. And what do you think about that? So I'm sort of asking them because they have to come to the realization themselves.
Yeah. Yeah.
No judging in that, right.
Yeah, so but I, before that, I was a little bit sort of telling them this is the way it has to be done. Yeah. And then when I was doing the course with you, I realized that, and I've actually put it into practice, and I've become a little bit more fluent in it, for a better word. Like I'm
a little more, feel a little more flexibility.
Yeah. More flexibility, yeah. And what I'm getting from that, Kevin, right, is that I'm not getting the resistance as much as I would have.
Yes.
Before I often got stuck in a loop with somebody that was coming against me, that they were a little bit inflexible, and then I met them with inflexibility back, and then we both got caught in the loop while the rest of the class.
You're doing the tug of war, right?
Yes, they observe, and it's not good for the shared purpose of the group.
No.
You know what I mean? Right, so that's the sneaky judging. You didn't mean to judge people.
I didn't mean it, but I still was doing it.
And it's the subtle shift of asking rather than telling, you know?
Exactly, Phil, exactly. But you know what? With me, with the Matrix and the other thing, it never stops giving as far as I'm concerned, right? The more I look at that, the more I observe, the more I learn, the more I start to notice, the more I look back at my notes, and I start noticing when I notice, and I start noticing what's going on, and it's like, wow, hang on a minute.
I've had the same problem.
Yeah, it's an occupational hazard of matrix use.
The ego's not getting in the way as much. I see it's there. I know it'll always be there, but I don't let it hinder my progress going towards my direction, my psychological flexibility as such. Mm-hmm. Yeah, in this regard, that I don't fall or get stuck in any patterns. I observe that they're there, and I say, you know what? Well, where did you come from?
Very interesting.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it just keeps giving to me. It's like looking at, one of them yoga things, like the pattern, like the more you stare at it moves, like a vortex pulling in. Well, I think the Matrix is like that.
Yeah.
The more you look at it, the more you think about it, the more you see, the more you recognize stuff, you know, and the more
stuff you notice.
Yeah.
Yes, the more fun it becomes. Well, noticing is the big word, Kevin, isn't it? Everything is noticing everything.
Yeah,
and it is a huge where you're going,
notice what you're feeling, notice what's coming up, noticing your choice.
Notice sneaky judging.
Yes,
notice the whole lot.
And the reason I add that in is because it's only been in the last few weeks that Phil and I sort of landed on that sneaky judging thing. Notice the sneaky judging. That. Yeah. Well, he and I started the Matrix at the same time. Started playing with it in 2009. So there's, now it's 2020. So 11 years later, and just a few weeks ago, it hands us a new thing.
There you go.
To notice. Yeah. So no, it does. It never stops giving. It just keeps on.
Yeah.
It's all in the noticing.
Right? Yeah, it's brilliant.
Fun stuff. Infinity is in the middle of it.
Exactly. Yeah.
Just a
fun thing. We're only doing that today, actually, in a group. You know, we were getting like directions off people. You know, we were doing an exercise on directions, basically, you know. And
directions? You mean like to someplace?
No, directions as in direction in your life.
Oh,
yeah, okay.
I'm sorry, I went concrete on you. Sorry.
Like
I don't know why. I was thinking directions to where?
Manchester, no.
It's sort of like just being flexible forever, isn't it? And just going forward to where you've gone. But as we often say, a direction, you know, is an ongoing thing. Because a lot of times someone would say, like, they'll come up with like a goal, you know, like, oh, I want to just get 28 days clean, you know. And they'd be saying, but that's not that, that's a like a you know, a milestone on your, we say, and you'd have to tease them out then. You'd say, well, what, hang on, but when you get to 28 days, then what are you going to do then?
No, that's the way we would approach it. Yeah, we'd say, yeah. Cool, 28 yeah. days, great. Yeah. And when you get to the 28 end of the 28 yeah. days,
what do you do? Stop.
Actually, the music goes off and an epiphany happens, yeah. And your life is forever good.
Choirs of angels begin to sing. And
yeah. Right, that's what happens at the end of 28 days. Probably. Now we might actually play with somebody like that, and they go, "No, yeah. it won't." And yeah. like, exactly, it won't. So yeah. what happens after 28 days?
I'm gonna get up on that 28th day. Right.
That's what we do. Like when we right. say start going through all the stuff, we say, well, what are you going to do? Just start going back or sit there twiddling your thumbs? Yeah. I said, no, them feelings will start adding back up.
Yeah.
You know? So we get them to say, well, actually, sobriety is the direction. And that's an ongoing thing for the rest of your life. You know, because you have people say things like, oh, and my children, my this, my that. And so I had one day with a guy, and he was his dilemma was, he said, Paul, I'm not sure what to pick for this direction, for this exercise, he said there. Right. Have my wife and my relationship, right, as one. And he says, also sobriety as two, right? So I said to him, well, look, let's think about this, I said, right, say your wife left you, I said, could your sobriety survive? I said, technically it could. It might feel really bad, but generally it could. The choice would be up to you. I said, you pursued your direction of your wife and neglected your sobriety, and you fell off the wagon as such, right? And went back on the alcohol. Could your relationship survive that, or would your wife just leave you? So you're in charge of sobriety, and that's all. And everything else, it's up to you whether you want to keep going with your sobriety. But if
good
you,
point. You're in charge of your own sobriety. You're not in charge of your relationships. You're in charge.
If you neglect your sobriety, right? And you start drinking, well, all of a sudden, you might find that you've no control over how your wife leaves you and everything else, because that's in their domain then, and they might just say, you know what, I don't believe this, I'm finished with you, you're going back on the alcohol. So if you keep going on your direction of sobriety and doing everything towards that, everything else will fall into place.
Hmm.
You know what I mean?
I can see where that's a... Now, you offer that up as an example. As a direction, because a lot of times people do struggle with the direction part. They just it's not concrete. It's hard to come up with. And if you said, you know, an example of a direction that you could pursue forever would be sobriety, because the next day you go for sobriety again. They go, oh, okay, that's what you mean by a direction.
Yeah,
that's it. That's the ticket. Yeah. Another one is health. You know, I've gone over with health.
Yeah,
I mean. You don't just get health and then go, okay, I'm done. You know, I want to eat what I want, lay around, do nothing. You know, go expose myself to diseases. No, health is an ongoing thing. You get up tomorrow and you do something for your health, for your sobriety. Those are the kind of things.
It's ongoing, isn't it? Of course.
Right. It's ongoing. Right. And they're the things that are necessary for you to, ultimately enjoy yourself.
Well, exactly. If you're not healthy, you can't do anything. But you know what else?
That old adage, as long as you got your health.
You have everything. You know? Health is your wealth.
True. And once you get sick, you go, yep, that's right.
I sure do miss my health right now.
All right. That's always
we say, for instance, right, sometimes someone would say, you'd say, well, what's a direction for you? And they'd say, well, family. So you'd be saying, no, you're going to have to shape that a little bit more, you know, more sharpen that up, because you're not going to stay clean for your granny or your auntie, because at a certain point that ends. Like, I mean, you don't really care about your brother. But for, we say, your child, for the rest of your life, you're going to care about your child, no matter how old you are. And for you to be an example to that child, you know, so you, the nurturing stage, then everything. So if someone's getting clear because you want to build a relationship, but they don't get to a certain point in a relationship with that child and they just say, okay, well, I've reached that now. I'm not bothered now. It just changes. So that's an ongoing direction. We, you know, that way as well. So we try and get to the sharp.
Well, that's a good, no, these are all great examples to share with people. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of different things to move, Kevin, you know.
But that's... people get the idea. It gets into, Phil and I were having fun with the Zen sayings the other day. Chop wood, carry water. That's the saying. Before enlightenment, chop wood, carry water. After enlightenment, chop wood, carry water. And well, what does that mean? That means life continues. You've got to look out for your health. You're going to have to put food.
You're tired.
All right, you're going to still have to be feeding yourself and resting and doing all that good stuff, enlightened or not enlightened, whichever way. And so that's what you're saying. You know, enlightenment is not a direction. It's neither here nor there. But taking care of yourself and making sure you got food and water and shelter and all of that stuff, that's a direction. That's something you need to do every single day. And keep it up.
I suppose education could be a direction, couldn't it?
Well, if you said you were going to learn every day, try and learn.
Ongoing for the rest of your life. You never stop learning.
No.
Technically, you do not. No, if you put your hand on a hot stove lid, you will learn not to do that at any age.
Yeah. But I suppose you wouldn't want to be out studying the whatever and not eating.
There you go. That's not workable. That's exactly what that means, right? You could get a PhD, but if you forget to eat, you're done.
You don't want to pass out in the process, right?
I have been exercising and you're too obese to walk down to the library. Right.
Exactly. So these kinds of discussions really help people out with these ongoing directions kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And it gets you out of the hoity-toity, I'm going to save the world kind of directions.
We all know them.
Those ego-based directions. Mm-hmm. And like, no, it's actually a lot simpler than that. It really is.
I want to have a 20-inch bicep.
There you go.
There you go. And once you get there, then where are you going to go?
Or in your pursuit of that, you end up ripping all your muscles and you can't do anything.
Right. So back to the old, the adage, chop wood, carry water. That's the stuff. And that would be the stuff of sobriety and health. And
Ongoing
stuff. No matter what, when you wake up tomorrow, there are going to be stuff that you got to deal with.
Yep.
Of course it is.
It's just going to be stuff that's going to come up. And a lot of that stuff that you thought was important is not so important anymore. Now the food and the water and this and the exercise and noticing, just noticing where you are and noticing your surroundings is always very important.
Exactly. Because people will always walk into your movie when you're not expecting it.
I like that. They'll always walk into your movie when you're
not expecting it and say something you don't like, and all of a sudden all this left quadrant will start kicking off. And if you're not psychologically flexible enough, you could succumb back to the likes of addiction.
Instead of saying, oh, you just walked into my movie. I noticed you walking in. Okay.
Exactly. And you're in the boat at all, but not in control of everything anymore.
Rats.
You know what I mean?
Rats. I hate when that happens. You know?
Phil shared something with me the other day, and I think it sort of kind of pertains to all of this, at least to what I was talking about, noticing your life, you know, on a daily basis. Yeah. And now, folks, really come hang into Mastermind sometime and with Phil and I and others, because we get way out there. We have fun.
But some left of alone, it gets pretty crazy.
But some of it's practical. And he sent me this video that I swear I've seen before, but had forgotten, of Kurt Vonnegut.
Oh, it's a wonderful video.
It's a wonderful video. And Kurt talking about story arcs and stuff. And boy, I got some stuff going on that, including the Big Lebowski. Yeah. But anyway, won't go there. But Kurt always talks about his, and literally said in every speech he ever made, referred to his uncle.
Favorite uncle.
His favorite uncle. And his favorite uncle was an insurance salesman. And so what comes to mind when you think insurance salesman?
Looking for money.
But are they saving the world?
Yeah.
No, we're just an insurance salesman. But he's probably putting food on the table and taking care of his kids, you know, and doing this and that and doing that. He said, and so his uncle was always, if he was with him, and it's like, for example, if they were out in the summertime sitting under a shade tree, drinking lemonade and listening to the honeybees fly around, his uncle would suddenly say, if this isn't good, I don't know what good is.
Right. Yeah, that's cool.
That's exactly what Kurt is talking about.
Everybody go, wait a minute.
Wait a minute.
This isn't nice. I don't know what is.
The simple things are best.
The simple things. Notice your life and notice when those moments of joy show up. Exactly. And you go, wow, this is good. Mm-hmm. This is nice.
You can build up those nice moments over time, right?
Yeah.
Well, now you got something to fall back on, right?
Right.
Exactly. Memories of nice moments.
Right. Those are cool. And you're going to have them now. If you think, you know, 2 years from now, I'm going to make a trip and then I'll have some nice moments.
You just have to open your eyes, don't you, really? And open your, notice what's around you. Because the only things that'll tell you that little simple things aren't nice is our conditioning from the society.
That's it. The messages. It's the messages that we get.
Yeah. Look, I had a conversation with somebody yesterday at one of my groups. And I was I was up at 6 o'clock. Or I was up earlier, that, but I was down having a sauna at 6 o'clock and a swim.
Really?
I was coming out, it was nice and crisp, a bit breezy, but I felt alive. And so I was talking to someone after, and he says, you know what? He says, the switch side of that would have been, I usually would have been going to bed at that time, sort of half stoned and thinking that, who'd want to be up at this time? They're probably not getting up to 6 o'clock that evening if I even went to sleep, you know? But I'm saying, just the simple things of being able to walk, being able to breathe the air, being able to feel the cold on my face.
Can you imagine? So you're walking down the street, and you're thinking, wow. This is nice. I'm noticing this is nice.
Exactly, Because if you're in the present, you can only see the nice in the zone. It's only if you're trying to stay somewhere else.
And that doesn't mean you can't also say, man, this sucks. You know?
Of course, it sucks, right. But if you're healthy, no matter what it is, you cannot, if you bring it right back to basics, once you're healthy and you're alive, really, you can't. What's to not like?
Yeah. What's not nice about that? Right? Yeah.
You know, I don't like the rain. Oh, well, you know, you're actually going somewhere in the rain.
Yeah.
I mean, otherwise, you could have sat at home and twiddled your thumbs and looked at daytime television. Isn't that so brilliant?
Well, that's good for you. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. You get to the nice in a hurry.
Turn on the talking heads on TV. They'll get you feeling nice.
That would make you feel really good, yeah. So that's what I'm just... But you know what? The thing about it is, Kevin, right? Maybe I'm in a position to actually appreciate the simple things more than most because I've been in the darkness for so long with drug addiction.
Yeah.
I know what it's like to be submerged when I wasn't alive and I was really looking.
There you go.
Right.
So I can appreciate the simple things now because I know how good it is just to be able to walk unaided, not to be slumbering and falling and, you know, trying to breathe because my lungs are full of heroin and all. So I'm actually able to appreciate them good things. And that's what I, you know, maybe it was because of the darkness that I'm able to appreciate the light more so.
Yeah. And you're helping other people. Make that
help a lot of people,
so they can wake up and notice, wow,
yeah,
this is good.
Yeah.
And I mean, I can also sort of give them my own personal thing. And, you know, if they identify with it, well and good, but I won't try and say them this is the way. Mm-hmm. You know, that way. I'll just say, well, this helped me, and I know a lot of people that did, and maybe it'll help you. You know. So with the things like, as we say, the Matrix and the exercise, it was just, it's brilliant, you know? And it's great. It's a great feeling when somebody else has seen their kids for the first time, or maybe they're going back to work, you know, they're employable again. And, you know, and they're saying to you, thanks very much. And you're just saying, listen, no, you know, it's cool. Like, I only showed you something that worked for me. And you actually done the work for it to work for you.
Yep.
But any of that it did, it was all about giving them, showing them, the majors, the directions, all that. And basically the big one, Russ, more so than anything, is besides getting them to know is everything, like how feelings can trigger off certain stuff, all that. Like the yellow mini exercise. You know, if you tell them not to think of a yellow mini, like,
right,
that's all they can think of. Yeah. Right? So it's already there. Yeah. So we try and get them to, like, what we do goes to we bring them on the pause button. Yeah.
Mm.
You know, bringing themselves back and notice it. Pause.
Right. Yeah, the pause part. Is hit the pause button right in the middle, in the middle of the matrix.
Yeah, exactly,
and,
yeah.
And notice.
Yeah,
pause and notice
at the same time. And then they have a choice what they want to do. Like, you either go towards or away. There's no sideways. You either pick going towards about their life or you can go back to the rubbish. And there's no good. Once you start going away, you have to stop and start turning direction because good things don't come from bad.
There you go.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Like, good behaviors don't come from bad behaviors. You have to stop it dead, like an infection. You have to root it out and then go back towards health as such, for a better analogy or a metaphor. I always get mixed up with them too, which is which.
They're all metaphors.
Yep.
But what's an analogy if that's the case?
Yeah. Well,
is that what words are a metaphor?
Oh, let me tell you something. Don't worry about it.
We don't really have what he
does. There's no quiz. There's absolutely no quiz.
Kevin, do you know what happened today in one of the groups?
No.
We were doing this thing about directions. You know, what's it towards, what's in the way, towards like sobriety in the next 7 days type of thing. And this guy said, gossiping. You know, like,
all right.
Oh, I love gossiping.
Right, listen to this, right? So he said, what's that? So I said, all right, well, what's that? So the others all said, yeah, that's it, in a way, behavior, yeah? So I says, yeah, it is, certainly is. I said, yeah. See, a man says, yeah, Paul, but it could be a towards behavior as well.
It could be.
I learned today, because I said, no way, gossiping is never good, right?
It could be good.
I know that. We end up getting the dictionary out and everything, yeah? And of course, yeah, it can be good.
That's Kurt again. Yep. That's Kurt Vonnegut. You don't know what's good and bad.
That's right.
Exactly.
You don't know.
I would have had a bit of a meltdown over that. You know, I'd have been like, oh, just, but I just pressed me pause. You know, now it's like, okay, and just said, you know what, folks? I don't get it right all the time. I'm learning the same as you, so just a little bit further on in the learning, because I've done this a bit longer, that's all.
Right.
So
because folks, and before we get, okay, so if you don't like where you are, like in a workplace, what we'll oftentimes do is gossip. I think there's a Yiddish term, kvetch, and that kind of stuff. However, on the other side, if you're sitting around a campfire talking about a couple of people getting married, you know, and it's sort of a gossipy kind of way, but that's not
no harm.
There's no harm to it, and it's social connections, and you're connecting up with people and stuff. So gossip in no way, shape, or form has to be an away move, nor does it have to be a toward move. It's contextual. It depends on the context.
But you know what, after a little bit of discussing with the group, you know, because I always discuss things with them, you know, that we don't really come across with a higher
That's a cool ass. Thing.
Yeah.
So what we said to them was, right, okay, I suppose that a little thing we could sort of say here is, if I'm discussing, we say, somebody with somebody else, it says, and then another person walks into the area, and you have to stop talking. Well, that's all the probably bad gossip.
That's probably. That's a bit probably
yeah. So talking, where would that go on the matrix?
That's a good behavioral definition. Yes, it is.
Yeah. So we saw the kind of
talking when so and so walked in the room. Right?
Instead of saying, "Hey, we were just talking about," So
we're just saying how we dislike.
We were just talking about how nice it would be if so and so got married. Would you like to join that gossipy conversation? Right, you know, because I think that's a better hitch for her than so and so. You know, but you know, we're not trying to be mean or anything. We're just
exactly.
Right, and it wouldn't be, but if we were talking really ugly things about
malicious,
malicious stuff, right?
Those quotes, you know?
Right. Yes. So it's malicious gossip versus kind, but you know within context. But
and you'll know it in the moment. You're not going to need to do another analysis of it, right? When that person.
So Paul's referring to in the training, and we try to get across to people who, like Paul, are certified, is that any behavior can be toward or away.
Yes.
It depends on the context. It's the intention in the context that the behavior is being done within. You know, one of my favorite ones to play with is that is the old, most parents know the old adage to tell your children, don't run with scissors.
Right.
Don't run with scissors. And you'll hear, don't run with the scissors. Oh my God, don't run with the scissors. Okay.
Right.
If I see somebody, a paramedic coming out of an ambulance with a sharp pair of scissors running at full tilt toward an accident victim to take care of that accident victim.
Yeah.
Is that a case of don't run with scissors? Well, no.
Exactly.
Not at all. So don't run with scissors isn't always an away move or a toward move or anything. It's just running with scissors. It just depends on the context of what it might be and you look at it. So behavior is just behavior. Look at it. However, us deep inside of ourselves, we run around our days moving away from yucky stuff and moving toward stuff that we want more of. And the more we notice that about ourselves and that the better chance we have of saying, you know, I got some choices here. It seems like I don't, but I do. Yeah. And like, okay, you're walking down, you're hurrying through the park. This is what I just thought of. So you're hustling, bustling through the park on a nice spring day, Phil. You know, you got to get from point A to point B in a goddamn hurry. Rush. And suddenly he smells some, I don't know, what's good something to smell? I don't know, apple blossoms or peach blossoms or something. He goes, oh yeah, there's those peach blossoms. Yep. Well, right then he could stop.
Yeah.
And go, oh, wow. You know, I could slow down a little bit here.
That smells pretty good. I like that.
I could sit on a bench here for at least 45 seconds or something, sort of take this all in. Notice how good, all good this is. And then get back up and rush to my destination. That's what I mean by a choice, folks. There's choices out there. There's even little snippets of choices of where you can change what you're doing, change noticing it. He might even say, why the hell am I in such a hurry?
Yeah. You know what, maybe. You might even say, if this isn't nice, I don't know what is.
I don't know what it is. Right. And I forgot why I was in a hurry.
What was that all about? Anyhow?
What was that about anyway? You know, I just got caught up, you know, and whatever, you know, and now you got a choice. And so the choices are always right there. That's the point. They're always right there. Yeah. Most people think there's some grand thing out there in front of them. No, they're right there with you right now. Make little choices, pause, smell the roses, notice how things are, And don't assume anything. If somebody's running, don't assume they're running away or toward anything. Say, hey, what you doing? Yeah. What you running
where,
for?
Where are you going with that running?
Where are you going? Where's that running taking you? Have you? And they go, well, I don't know. Well, there you go. That might be something to consider. And that's it. So once again, you don't tell people not to run or to run. Ask them, where's the running taking you?
Exactly.
It's not my business to get in the way of running.
Yep.
Exactly. It's only your own. Maybe a child that's in your car that you can say don't run to. You know,
anyone and that else you do. Right. They're about to step off the curb into traffic. Exactly. And you go, no, don't do that.
Right. Give me them scissors.
And right. What does anyone? Give me them scissors. Where'd you get those things anyway?
You just look after yourself. Make sure your side of the street is clean, and that's it. What other people do has not got to do with
it. And that's their thing, right? Yeah. Everybody's got their own journey, you know. Yeah. However, sometimes you can be close to them, and you can ask kind questions.
Yeah, well, that's different, yeah.
Well, but that's what you're doing with the Matrix. That's what all of us are doing with the Matrix. We're asking kind questions.
Yeah, but that's a different situation. I know when I walk in the door that's what I'm going to have a load of. I'm expecting that, you know. But I'm talking about in general, when you're out and about just walking around, you can't tell people what to do because they just look at you as if,
oh no, you don't. Yeah, you're definitely not going to tell people what to do.
You don't have the context.
No. Oh, come you here, definitely come here don't have the context for that.
Yeah.
Every once in a while, I love to tell the story. And folks out on the podcast, I really do this. People will somehow be talking with me and they'll say, well, what do you do? And I'll say, oh, I'm a psychological flexibility expert. And they'll go, what? What is that? Because that's sort of interesting. And then I can say, oh, it's just this diagram that has these four questions, you know, and the first one is about who's important to you. So I run around getting to ask people who's important to them. And I go, oh, well, isn't that nice? See, that's a kind question. See how I snuck that in there? So I could actually ask them a kind question in less than 30 seconds. Because whenever you ask somebody who's important to you, they look inside themselves and they think, oh, who's important to me? And that's kind. Yep. Always a good idea to think about who's important to you. That's always worthy of a moment of consideration.
Also nice.
And so all that is goes from what do you do to I'm a psychological flexibility expert to, well, how does that look? Oh, it's just four questions. And the first one's who's important to you? That did my thing. So I'm just saying I can sort of flip the script on people and get that a kind question in even out on the streets. Right.
Of course.
Not always.
Clients, yeah.
Not always, but sometimes I get the opportunity to do it.
Yeah. Well, everybody likes something nice to be said to them. You know, it's very, very, it's very rarely you'll ever get resistance when you ask something with a good heart in a nice way.
Exactly. You
know? Yeah.
That's exactly. It. Right. Yeah. I mean, they really don't get the impression I'm trying to panhandle them or something, you know.
No, it's
important to you. It's not what I'm about. Then you go on about your business.
Sometimes they actually, they're surprised because probably no one's ever said anything nice to them ever.
Exactly.
That's a lot of this world, isn't it? People don't say nice things to each other.
We're not used to being asked. We're not used to having nice questions be asked of us, period.
Yeah, true, big time.
Now, Phil and I have a lot of discussions about that, but that's for another time and another station podcast. Or something. I don't know. But we'll get on to that. Well, this has been fascinating. Yeah. Actually, we've covered quite the Matrix conversation coming around started with the point of view of the people who Paul works with, who folks, they are severe substance use folks. They've spent years at it. They've almost killed themselves with it.
Oh, big time. Liver cirrhosis, lungs, 17 years, emphysema, you name it.
Right. They got all those, They got all those really bad conditions that you hear that are related to decades of substance, whatever the substance is.
Yes.
And so he works with them, which is obviously an interesting population to deal with.
There's a lot to offer, Kevin, when you get actually finally trailed to them. There's most of
them staying clean now. They have a lot to offer. They have much life to share with you.
Yeah.
Interesting story arcs, yeah. To put it in Kurt Vonnegut's
term. Yeah, right.
I like them just the way they are.
There you go.
There you go. He's learned Mr. Rogers. I like you just the way you are.
That's it.
I was listening in the lessons, yeah.
You have been.
Just as a point, folks, and this might be difficult to get to, but when you're sitting with somebody, it's best to be, I shouldn't say that. Phil and I have found it best. I guess Paul has too. Yeah. We have found it best if we like the person just the way they are. Things go better.
Anybody else?
Things go better from that point of view. And you might try that yourself. Yes, get inside yourself that the person in front of you is, you can like them just the way they are.
Just as they're sitting there.
And from there's a lot of flexibility. Think of it, if you look at somebody and you don't like the way they are as they sit in front of you, how much flexibility are you going to bring to the conversation? Not very much, right? It's going to muck up your psychological flexibility. So since we're always going for that psychological flexibility. Now, that does not mean we like all the behaviors they ever did.
No.
All the stuff they did in the past or anything. It doesn't mean that. No. Mm-hmm. We're just saying right now, in this present moment, looking at the person right now.
That's all that counts.
In this moment, we like them just the way they are, because that's where it all starts, right there, right then. So that's it. Other than that, you're bringing the baggage of the past in, and it doesn't work.
And that sneaky judging we talked about earlier in the podcast gets in there too.
Right, it gets in there very quickly, and so now that's what we're talking about. But it's in the moment. Noticing in the moment, I like this person just the way they are, and taking it from there. And also, folks, this we haven't talked about it before, but if you do hear that great Kurt Vonnegut story about his uncle, who had the ability to pause often and say, man, if this isn't nice, I don't know what nice is. Or the variation, if this isn't good, I don't know what good is. You know, so there's good stuff going on right now. Catch those moments in your life. And everybody has them.
Yeah.
Got to notice them.
Hit that pause button, right, Paul?
That's right. That's right.
Oh, that's another adage. By the way, that pause button that Paul keeps talking about for those people who used to be severe substance users, guess what? We can all use it.
Yeah.
Exactly.
We all need to use the pause button.
We all have the choice. We can all notice that happen, of course.
Press pause.
We can all press pause and go, oh, yeah, what's going on here? What's that? Yeah. Right. And very powerful. Okay, well, who knows when I'll get around to posting this, but in the next week or two, I will have this podcast up and published. In the meantime, what else is going on for us? Oh, I didn't even give the date. This is actually being recorded on March the 10th, 2020.
Yes.
I say that because these things live on into infinity on YouTube and in other places. As you post them up, they keep on going. But this is great. Oh, we haven't named it, though.
Oh, yeah.
We're playing.
The Matrix never stops giving.
What was that?
The Matrix,
never stops giving.
Okay, hold on. I gotta get a pen. I got it. Paul Rock.
That'll work.
Right. 3, 10, 20. Got it. Okay. Man, this has been wonderful.
Yeah.
And today, just so Paul knows, yes, we do have a mastermind today.
Yeah.
At 4 o'clock.
2 hours.
And anybody who wants to sign up and get certified, no matter what price structure you come in, you get admitted into the mastermind, and, which we get silly and discuss.
Cook up lots of stuff.
We riff. Riff on stuff, right? We have fun, like jazz. So if you're around, drop on by at 4 o'clock. I know that's later your time, Paul. So
yeah.
So 9 o'clock, isn't it? Yeah. 9 o'clock your time.
Yeah.
So, okay. But in the meantime, we'll be back. Bye bye all.
Yeah.